Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Exodus 20. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male servant or your female servant, or your livestock or the sojourners who are within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that it is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. The word of the Lord.
As Tim just mentioned, I get to talk about the what and the why of Sabbath. And I think I'm the luckiest, but I think all of us probably feel that way because it is a really beautiful topic. And the hope is that through these sessions, we'll be able to enter more deeply into the gift, the absolute gift that God has given us, and to be able to embrace that gift more fully. So I'm going to talk first about what the Sabbath is, and then we're going to lean more into three aspects of why we are given the Sabbath. And the first will be for our freedom, the second for our flourishing, and the third for our formation. And so what is Sabbath? Well, on the very basic level, I think all of you know what Sabbath is. I'm sorry, my mic is not really staying very close to my mouth there. Is that better? I'll speak loud. At the most basic level, it's one day in seven that is not work, right? It's one day in seven that is rest. And the word Sabbath or Shabbat means to cease or to rest or complete rest or desist. And we know, because Bonnie just read it for us, that on the seventh day, God finished the work he had done, and he rested on the seventh day, and he blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy. And then Exodus 20, it's the fourth commandment, the fourth out of the Ten Commandments. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. For Jews, this has traditionally been Saturday. Saturday in a week, beginning on Friday at sundown and going to Saturday sundown. And for Christians, that changed to Sunday after the resurrection, as Christians began to understand how Jesus' resurrection from the dead was a new creation, and new resurrection, the first day of the week, became the Sabbath for Christians. Some of us have grown up with Sabbath practices, depending on our different traditions that we grew up with, and some haven't. And for those who have, often Sunday as a day of rest meant you go to church, you don't go to work. For some, it means not spending any money. For some, it means no secular activities, no secular music, no secular TV, no books. And often it's defined by what is not allowed, what's not allowed on the Sabbath. And that has tended to kind of work against us. Walter Brueggemann, I'm going to be quoting a couple books at length today. One of them is Walter Brueggemann's Sabbath as Resistance, Saying No to the Culture of Now. It's a great book. And he says that Sabbath practices for Christians have often led to legalism, moralism, and life-denying practices. And so we tend to sway between moralism and ignoring it completely. And I am totally guilty of all of these things. But wrestling with what Sabbath looks like, what rest looks like, is not a new thing. And you can see it even in Jesus' day as the rabbis and Jesus were wrestling with each other over what Sabbath rest actually meant. And so I'm going to throw our first question up on the screen, and I'm going to invite you to turn to your neighbors and speak in groups of three or four and discuss what have your experiences of Sabbath been. Maybe you haven't had any, and that's fine. If you have they been positive or negative? What activities, if any, were prohibited in your household or in the households of those around you? So I'll give you a few minutes to chat with your neighbors on that question. As I said, Sabbath is given for our freedom, our flourishing, and our formation. And this is a gift that didn't end in the Old Testament. The importance of Sabbath is emphasized throughout the whole of Scripture. And it's emphasized for our good, because it is a gift. The second book I'm going to reference today is this one, Abraham Joshua Heschel's book, The Sabbath. I highly, highly recommend this book. Abraham Heschel was a scholar, activist, author, and theologian, Jewish man, and he has a beautiful take on Sabbath. It's around. You can take a picture and pick up a copy. And he says, "The Sabbath is the most precious present mankind has received from the treasure house of God." I'm going to use his language, which is gendered, knowing that I am a woman, and so you know it applies to everybody. "Sabbath is the most precious present mankind has received from the treasure house of God." Isn't that beautiful? And so first, Sabbath is given for our freedom. In Deuteronomy, we hear that you shall remember you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath. Therefore, it's because you were slaves in Egypt. And this is actually really important, because as slaves in Egypt, the Israelites got no rest, none whatsoever. In Exodus 5, we're given a narrative that talks about how the labor system that the Israelites worked in under Pharaoh endlessly demanded more production. Sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? Endless production, always with fewer and fewer resources. Slaves had to produce bricks to build more supply depots, to store more grain, to grow more grain, to build more bricks, to store more, you know, it went on and on and on. And it wasn't just the slaves who suffered under this, it was the taskmasters, because they always were also on the slaves. And Pharaoh was also always on the taskmasters. And so everybody was caught up in this system of endless production. And God broke in, and God rescued the Israelites from that anxious system. And he began teaching them about his system, a system that was based in covenantal relationship rather than endless production. But we aren't slaves in Egypt, you might say. Or are we? Exodus 5:15, there's this line where Pharaoh is talking to the Israelites and he says, "You are lazy. You are lazy. And that's why you say, let's go sacrifice to the Lord." You are lazy. That lie permeates our culture and gives us so much guilt whenever we try and step away, doesn't it? You are lazy. In a system of anxiety, you have to produce more, to produce more, to produce more. And you are not allowed to take a break out of that. And if you try, you will be called lazy. And so here's a question, the next question. What are some ways that our modern relationship with productivity resembles the Israelite slavery in Egypt? How are we caught up in some of the same things that the slaves were caught up, and how is it different? And let's just, instead of going into groups on that one, let's just throw back and forth some ideas. So we may not be Israelites who have recently escaped from slavery to Pharaoh, but we obviously deal with many, many of the same pressures. And the invitation to Sabbath is an invitation to our freedom, as well as the Israelites' freedom, because we serve a God who rested on the seventh day. And that divine rest, Walter Brueggemann says, has made it clear that, number one, God is not a workaholic. He doesn't keep working. Number two, that God is not anxious about the full functioning of creation. And number three, that the well-being of creation does not depend on endless work. We are given Sabbath by God for our freedom. Number two, Sabbath is given for our flourishing. It's a rhythm that is built into creation. Daryl Johnson, in his book on the Ten Commandments, says, in the fourth commandment, our maker is saying, I am revealing a mystery, one that you never would have figured out on your own. You're built in such a way that wholeness is experienced in 6 + 1. 6 + 1 equals wholeness. It's built for us. It's built as a gift to us. The Sabbath was made for man or humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. It is a whole day that is set apart and blessed and made holy. And Abraham Heschel says it's a day for the sake of life, an opportunity to mend our tattered lives. One day in seven that we and all creation are invited to enter into what Abraham Heschel calls a palace in time. God didn't first create something, or when he blessed something and made it holy, it wasn't a space, it wasn't a place to make a temple, it was time. He blessed and created this one day in seven that we can enter into, a holy space. To observe the seventh day, Heschel says, doesn't mean merely to obey or to conform to the strictness of a divine command. To observe is to celebrate the creation of the world and to celebrate and to create the seventh day all over again. Every seventh day, we're invited to celebrate the creation of the world all over again. I'm going to put up a quote from Abraham Heschel, a longer one. And the last bit will be on the screen. The seventh day is the armistice. I like that. The armistice in man's cruel struggle for existence, a truce in all conflicts, personal and social, peace between man and man, man and nature, peace within man, a day on which man avows his independence of that which is the world's chief idol. He's talking about money there. In the tempestuous ocean of time and toil, there are islands of stillness where a person may enter a harbor and reclaim their dignity. The island is the seventh day, the Sabbath, a day of detachment from things, instruments, and practical affairs, as well as attachment to the spirit. An island of stillness. And so the Sabbath is a gift designed for us and for all creation, for its flourishing. It is built for us. We are also built for it. We are built not to work all the time, and we all know this. We burn out. And burnout has become such a common thing in our culture. I actually have a theory that every single person in the world is burned out right now after COVID, and the intense anxiety and emotional stress that COVID brought. And then COVID ended and we all jumped into our lives again and also into political turmoil that resulted from COVID. And here we are, all of us, exhausted 3 years after the end of COVID. And I think that it's worldwide. Burnout. Our minds and our bodies and our spirits all function best when we have regular periods of rest. Heschel says, 6 days a week, the spirit is alone, disregarded, forsaken, and forgotten. And then the candles are lit. and the world becomes a place of rest. It is a moment of resurrection. The Sabbath comes like a caress, wiping away fear, sorrow, and somber memories. Animals are built for the Sabbath. Exodus 23, verse 12 says, 6 days you shall do your work, but on the seventh you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may have rest. They need rest as well. The Sabbath should continue. Exodus 34 says, even during harvest and planting seasons. And I grew up in a farming community, and I know what that means. That is extremely difficult to hold to. That you would stop all your work one day in seven. And yet that is what the Bible is telling us is best for us and for our land and for our animals, for everything, for all of creation. And the land is built for it. Leviticus 25 reminds us that the land flourishes on a rhythm of rest. Every seventh year, there should be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. And this concept of lying fallow, again, if you have any relationship with farming or farmers, you know that this is a real thing, letting fields lie fallow, and it is very good for the fields. You can overwork the fields by keeping them going nonstop. But if you let them lie fallow, they get to replenish their nutrients again and disrupt pest cycles so that the pests go away. It's good for the land. And it's so important that when the land doesn't get its rest, God sends the people into exile. And he does it so that the land will have their rest. Leviticus 26 says, when you're in your enemy's land, then the land shall have its rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. As long as it lies desolate, it shall have rest. That the rest that it did not have on your Sabbath when you were dwelling in it, it will get. And then 2 Chronicles 36, he took into exile in Babylon those who escaped from the sword until the land enjoyed all of its Sabbaths. All the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years, all the Sabbaths that it had missed. So all of creation, humans and animals and all of the land, all of it is built to function on this rhythm of 6 plus 1, work plus rest. The third thing that Sabbath is given for us is given for our formation as a kingdom people. It teaches us to trust. You may remember the story of manna, which Tim referred to in the breaking of the bread, where the manna was given every single day. And every single day, the Israelites had to go out and gather the manna, except for the sixth day. And on the sixth day, they had to gather twice as much to hold them over to the seventh day. And this was a really cool thing, because if they tried to gather more than they needed for each day, the excess would rot. So it didn't work any other day of the week. But that day, if you gathered excess, you had to gather excess, and it wouldn't rot. It would hold good for the next day. So it's teaching us to trust that God will provide for that next day. It teaches us to trust in God's sanctification, that by working every day, we don't make ourselves holy. In Ezekiel 20, the prophet says, God says through the prophet, moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between me and them, that they may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. I gave them my Sabbath so that they would know that I sanctify them. I make them holy. It is not our work. It is not anything we do on those 6 days that makes us holy. It is just letting God sanctify us. The Sabbath teaches us to obey. It's a hinge commandment. It's the fourth commandment, and it comes after three commandments that talk about who God is. And then it looks forward to the rest of the commandments that talk about how we will relate to our neighbors. And it's a hinge commandment because if we live in a rhythm of Sabbath, of rest and trust in God and God's provisions, it is easier to keep all the other commandments. We are more easily able to remember who God is and to not set idols up in God's place. And we are also able to easier relate to each other. We are less tempted to steal, to lie, to covet, to murder, all the things. You don't have to do that because you are resting in God's provision. It teaches us equality, and this gets back to some of the comments that were called out earlier. Sabbath is the great day of equality, where all are equally at rest. This is from Walter Brueggemann again. Not all are equal in production, not all are equal in consumption, but Sabbath breaks that gradation. And on the Sabbath, you don't have to sell more than anyone else, you don't have to do more, you don't have to control more, you don't have to know more, you don't have to have your kids in ballet or soccer, this is Walter Brueggemann's example. You don't have to be younger or more beautiful, you don't have to score more. On this one day breaks the pattern of coercion. So that all are like you, all are equal, and all are of equal worth and equal value and have equal access to equal rest. That is what the Sabbath is offering us, a chance to all be equal on a level playing ground. I know there are challenges with this for people who have to work 7 days, working mom who's got 2 jobs and so on. And I fortunately get to point to James and say, he gets the how of Sabbath. I'm just talking about the what and the why. You have to deal with that. And finally, the Sabbath prepares us for eternal rest. And here's a longer quote from Heschel again. Just as heaven and earth were created in 6 days. He says, why would the Genesis refer to on the seventh day God ended his work? On the seventh day. He says, wouldn't it be more likely that you would say God ended his work on the sixth day and then he rested on the seventh day? He did rest on the seventh day, but he ended his work on the seventh day. And Abraham Heschel says the ancient rabbis reasoned that God created something different on the seventh day. The seventh day was when he created rest. He created tranquility and repose and peace. It's not a negative concept, but something real and intrinsically positive. It's the state where the wicked cease from troubling and the weary are at rest. It's the state in which there is no strife and no fighting, no fear and no distrust. The essence of good life is this word rest, menuha. And in later times, this word rest, menuha, became synonymous for the world, the life of the world to come, eternal life. We taste eternal life every 7 days. And so Sabbath is less about do's and do nots and more about the experience of being cared for. This was something that a parishioner said to me last week, and I asked if I could quote her by name, and she said, leave my name out of it. But she said she has wrestled with what to do and not do on the Sabbath, but she said, more than that, when she's fully experienced Sabbath, it's been an experience of being cared for. And I think that is really the point of it, that we get to experience being cared for every 7 days. One day a week, we practice living in trust, as God intended us to, and as we will get to again in our eternal rest. Abraham Heschel, last quote, and then I'll give you a question and we'll move on. Abraham Heschel, a seventh part of our lives may be experienced as paradise. What a powerful thought that is. If that is true, what are we losing by not trying to tap into this glorious gift? A seventh day of our lives may be experienced as paradise. What practices in your life lead to flourishing, joy, peace, and contentment? And what would it look like to think of Sabbath as making time for these practices? Not so much as do's and do nots, but what does it look like to experience flourishing every 7 days?
You've just listened to a podcast from Little Trinity Church in Toronto. Please check out our website at www.littletrinity.org to find out more about our ministries and services.